Turpins with Travis Garrison on the Filter 68 Networks. I got my boy, former Terp, former Pro Bowler, NFLer, my guy.
Yes,
Jackson, man. What's going on, bro?
Man, life is good, man. It's good to see you. The last time we connected, we was at Maryland's homecoming. We had a chance to reconnect in the good way. And I remember leaving there thinking, I was like, man, we got to stay in touch. You're doing a lot of great things in the community. I had known it, but finally, when I had a chance to talk to you, you brought it to life, and you convinced me and inspired me to do a little bit more in the community. So life is good, man. I can't complain. The family's good. We've been healthy for the most part. A little sniffles here and there, but we hadn't had COVID or anything like that. We managed to avoid that, but for the most part, everything has been everything.
Man, that's awesome, man. Yeah, man, it was definitely great catching up with you at the homecoming, man. You know, a lot of times I tell people, you know, I just recently started doing the homecoming thing. You know, seeing all the people that we connect with, people that we went to school with,
right,
man, you're seeing all the guys reminiscing about the old times, man.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, man. Good, man. It's good to, you know, and I was the same way for the longest time. I kind of avoided it for whatever reason. But, you know, now as we're older, we use it as a way to connect. I ended up connecting with some people that I hadn't seen in forever. You know, and now we'll continue to that communication or what have you. But yeah, man, homecoming is always good to go back, connect. You never know how someone is in a position to help you and push you forward. And
absolutely,
you know, in this community, the DMV area, everybody, that's what attracted me a lot to this area when I was done, was just a sense of community. From my wife's friends that she grew up with from a very young age, they went to college, they still connect, they still look out for each other. You know, it's a sense of community, man. And, you know, that's something that I look forward to every year, to be honest with you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I try to get back up there. I think the first time with the homecoming, man, it was the first time I did tailgates. Yeah. I ain't know anything about tailgate, bro. I was at Murray, some of the dudes would be going up there around 8, 9 of them. I said, man, I'm not getting out of bed before 12 o'clock.
Nah.
I went to homecoming and went to the tailgates. I'm like, man, I've been missing out, bro.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not the hardcore tailgater, but I'll show up for a few hours.
Right.
So the last tailgate, we was there until I had my son with us. You know, his bedtime. We had to get him home. If he was with the aunties or something like that, there's no doubt in my mind we would have ended up there as long as the party was going on. Tailgate is big business, man.
It is, man. Then, like you said, just for me, it was like, first of all, seeing that and seeing the obviously before COVID, like when things were still kind of crazy, but the way things were, man, and then just connecting with the alums and the boosters and talking to those individuals, man, and then, you know, talking about, you know, them giving me their perspective of when I was playing and what their experiences like. I'm talking about when I say mind-blowing stories, because as players, we on the field, we on the court, so we not really in the midst of it, you know what I mean? And we probably see them after the games for a quick second, but we don't really get to talk to them like that.
But
these tailgates, man, they telling me stories of, you know, for example, like the ACC, we won the ACC championship, that tournament weekend, and the experience and the highs and lows they went through, and then the experience in the parking lots, and it was pretty cool, man. It was just like, man, I was living vicariously through them.
It actually is. It gives you hit a good point, because when we're playing, we're so caught up in what we're doing, training, playing, and we're moving on to the next week, and we don't have time to really fully appreciate how much, you know, how much other people see us, you know. And now as a, you know, alum, you come back and you run into people that you either cross paths with or saw you play whatever the case may be, it makes you feel good. It makes you feel good that, okay, people actually respected and understood the effort and the commitment I put towards my craft. And, you know, it's funny, when we were there, well, y'all were good in basketball. And basketball was my first love. And if you would have told me when I was young that I was going to play what professional sport I was going to play, I would have chose basketball. So when I was at Maryland, I could never get to a game. Either we were playing, or like some the point system, bro. I could never go to a game. Either I had study hall or in 4 years, I never had a chance to go to a game. And bro, I tried. Point I tried so much, I was like, all right, I'm done. I'm not even.
Real, man, you should have just hit me up, bro. You know how to left me some tickets, man.
I know, man. It was like we would cross paths at like weird times. I was like, all right, I'm seeing you here. And then y'all schedule, you know, if I remember y'all away or something like that, it just never worked out for me, man. Oh, that's my goodness.
The point system, I forgot all about how you operate those things up there, man.
Because I tried the old fashioned way, try to go through the, I don't know, whatever system they had to go through the point. I'm like, hell, I didn't have any points. I couldn't request no games.
It's crazy. Oh, man. That's wild, bro. Dang, you go to nothing. Yeah, man, ACC was live, too. That's back when we was ACC, so every game was lit. Yeah, bro.
Man, I remember running around. Okay, go ahead, my bad.
No, go ahead, my bad, go ahead.
I said, I remember when y'all beat Duke and the whole university just went crazy. Bro, I was out there with him. I was out there with him. Burning mattresses, doing all that. I didn't like no flame, but I was close enough to see it. I was like, man, this is dope, man.
Oh, man. Hey, yeah, man. And honestly, bro, that's what I wish I would experience. Like, I heard about it after they won the national championship. They told me that. And then every time they beat Duke, they do something live. So I didn't know any of these things until the next day when in the papers they had like Route 1, like that where Cornerstone, all that is, Natchez on fire and stuff like that. I said, man, I missed out on all the festivities.
Yeah, it was so much fun, bro. That's one of my highlights of my college experiences, bro, outside of football and all that good stuff. But it was like, it was all young people just running around, you know, just having fun, man, just... Everybody was happy we beat Duke. I'm like, okay.
Right, I hate Duke.
I get it.
Man, it's so, man, I tell people, man, all the time, man, that, you know, when I was up in College Park, how I tried my best to connect with the student body because and the stories I used to hear, man, they used to, you know, stories of how, like, you know, they always thought the athletes thought they were this and that. And so I try to go outside of that, not force it, but I pretty much just be like, I'm just like y'all, you know, I just tweet, you know what I mean? Right. But I'm just like, so I used to go to everything, bro. I'm talking about fraternity parties, sorority. I used to go to anything. Hey, bro, I was I can talk about it now, but I tell people all the time that it cost me some, but I was not like the typical dedicated as I should have been athlete. I was more of everything.
My freshman year, I remember my freshman year, man, I didn't miss a party. I didn't miss somebody. If I knew of somebody having something going on, I showed up. I was like, this is my first time away from home. I get to make my own decisions. I'm going to embody what it is to be a student athlete. And I'm going to, you know, it was, and you're right, bro. Towards the later part of my career, or 4 years there, I mean, you're around the same people every day. So it's like, okay, you kind of want to branch away a little bit. And I mean, pretty much everyone kind of, you know, went to the same parties or what have you. But yeah, I'm with you, bro. I feel you. I was trying to go to everything. You know, if it was there, and my grades struggled a bit because I spent too much time burning both ends of the candle.
Right.
You know, I ended up making it through, but that was a good time, man. Maryland was fun.
We came right after they won the national championship. And I tell people all the time, for me, I grew up like it was strictly basketball. I go to school. I went to DeMathis, so it was all boys school. I go there. Right after school, we got practice. Right after practice, it's like already 6-7. I'm going home, eat, do study, whatever. Go to sleep. Wake up the next day. It's the same routine over and over again. So I barely did anything. Like, you know, some kids that have parties at their parents' house when their parents wasn't home, I'll probably go once, I only been two of them, maybe. Yeah, so, but I haven't really experienced the party life like that. So when I got on the campus, bro, it was just like, man.
This is all mine.
Bro, the first 2 weeks, man, I tell people all the time, the first 2 weeks on campus, bro, I lied to you not, the first 2 weeks, I didn't go to bed no earlier than like I was up at least by 2. Like, I'd be up until like 2 o'clock in the morning every single day for 2 weeks straight.
I believe you. Trust me. And you were from this area, and you had an experience. I was from this small little town in Florida, Largo, Florida, where everyone knew everybody. So if I did anything, there was always eyeballs on me. But I was similar to you in high school. I was committed to schoolwork, man. I was I didn't go to party. I mean, I went to some, but I didn't want to jeopardize something happening and jeopardize this small little window opportunity I had. So I dug deep. And so when I got to Maryland, I'm like, man, I can go do this. I can do this. Like, I mean, I was all over the place, man. Like, I know you know Tasha, Natasha Chris. Like, Tasha, we had moments. She had to, like, curse me out like an auntie, bro. Like, I was not trying to hear none of it.
Right.
I love football. That was the only way they could get through to me. It was like, I'm going to take football away. I was like, all right, let me reel it back a little bit.
Yeah. But,
for the most part, that was a steady dose, man. I realized just how great this area was and how big the campus is. Mm-hmm. You know, from one side to the other, it's going to take you, if you're walking 15, 20 minutes. And, you know, it was so much going on that I wasn't used to. I actually got homesick.
I remember
training camp. You know, training camp tour days back then, it wasn't like it was in the NFL right now where you can't have two consistent back-to-back tour days.
Gotcha.
College back then, there was no rules. It was just a matter of you woke up at 6, you were done at lights out or at 11, and you repeated that for 3 weeks. And you were in the dorm rooms with a roommate, and you had these uncomfortable beds, and it was just the food was terrible, and you smelled the same smells every day. It was intended to like try to mentally just mess with you. You know what I mean? And I remember getting homesick because I felt like obviously the football was one thing, but I wasn't playing well. In my mind, I was going to walk in and just dominate from the beginning. And we all been there. It was like, you were studs. We were studs where we were. And now we're in a room full of other studs. Like, what was going to separate us? Mm-hmm. So I went through that hard time, and I doubted myself. That was the one time I doubted myself, my ability. And I remember talking to my uncle and him saying, you know what, you know, I can't say it right now, but he basically told me what I needed to hear as opposed to what I should have heard. And he was like, listen, you're not doing this just for you. You have other little people, other little kids that look up to you in this area. If you make it, they make it. And you give them hope to keep pushing forward. So that's all I needed. And obviously you had some bumps in the road at each point, but that was the turning point in my life when I realized, like, okay, let me stick this out. Let me tough it out. And it ended up getting better, you know?
Right. You know, the struggle for me, though, bro, to be honest with you, man, and I tell kids now because I talk to them, and, you know, as we get older, man, we realize we look back over our careers or life or whatever, and we try to help the younger generation. I tell the kids all the time, like, you know, I was a shelter because I had older brothers, so they party, and sometimes I went to party with them and stuff like that. But, you know, I didn't know my status in a sense when I went to Maryland. In a sense, I knew I'm from this area. I went to the math. People knew
who I was. Big dog on campus, bro.
So, but I didn't. My mindset was like, yo, I'm just like everybody else. So when I went to parties, when I went to go hang out, or I went to clubs in the city, like, I'll go to the clubs, and people are just, oh, nah, he can't get in because I know how old he is. I know who he is. And I'm like, how do they know who I am? You know what I mean? Like, this is our first time going to this club. How do they know who I am? So I didn't fully comprehend that. And then I tell people all the time, I got caught up in the whirlwind of, especially back then, D.C. was crazy. Like, it was really crazy. Good. It was really good. It was really good. Campus was really good. Everything, man, everything. So I tell people all the time, I got caught up in a whirlwind. It was hard for me to get out. Even times I'd be like, you know what, man? I'm going to chill out. I'm a whole fast. I'm going to dedicate. Because I had to have people in my ear too. Like, man, look, man, my brother called me like, man, you say you're trying to get to the league, this, that, and the third. But, man, you, every time I hear you, out partying. Like, how you going to do that? You know what I mean? So
let me ask you this, Trav. Was it difficult to So when I made the decision to go to college, I could have went to the University of Florida. And for
that's what I was going to ask you.
For me, yeah, for me, it was like a fifth year high school, because all the a bunch of my people that went to my high school would go to Florida, and it was so close to home. And for me, I was like, man, I wanted to get it. For me, I was different. I wanted to get away. I wanted to see something different. I was like, Florida is cool. Florida State. Now, if Florida State would have offered me, that would have been a different story. That would have been a no-brainer. I would have cut it.
They didn't offer you? They didn't offer you?
No, they never offered. Wow. My year, they had some guys, Buster Davis, Sam McCrew. They had about four or five star linebackers that they brought in my year. You go by the ratings back, I was like a three-star guy. But gotcha. University of Florida offered me. But I knew I always wanted to get away. I was like, man, home is good, but I want to go someplace else. But I know that was my biggest fear. Now, looking back, if I would have been in Florida, like, it probably would have been a harder challenge for me to stay focused, because everybody that I'd grown up with had so much access to me. So let me ask you this. Do you think it was more difficult for you to manage all of that as a 17, 18-year-old being so close to home after coming on the heels of a Maryland national championship, ACC, you're the talk of the town, you know what I mean? I can only imagine how much pressure that was for a young person.
Because like you said, man, sometimes we're in the midst of everything, so we don't really truly sit back and just think about stuff. But sometimes I do. Sometimes I'm alone and I'm reflecting on life and everything. And I think about that, man. I'm like, I'm home. I'm talking about, bro, like the access people had to me. And I'm the type of person, I was like, oh man, you come with me, whether we cool or not. I'm the type of person, like, if I'm going to party or have fun, y'all come with me. I got y'all. Let's all have a good time. I know what it is. You guys could be using me for this. But like, I don't even care about that. Like, we just going to have a good time. We just enjoy life.
You want to be around good energy.
Yeah, so, but at the same time, like, I knew a lot of these people, they didn't really care about me, because I don't get those phone calls now, you know what I mean? So, but during that time, now I was going in, and people want to, they know I'm going to the club and get access inside and things like that, so they're going to call me up, hey, let's go out, let's hang out, let's do this and that, because they're going to go, wherever I go, they're going to get in for free, and they're going to get whatever privileges I have, they're going to get
right.
So, I mean, looking back on it now, if I don't went somewhere else, things have probably been different. I mean, I tell kids now, if I really wanted to make it and get to the league in regards to I could have just said, you know what, man, forget the party. I'm going to focus and dedicate myself, regardless of where I'm at. Because, I mean, you're going to have parties or anything you want to do everywhere. But so that had a lot to do with my discipline. But, I mean, I had so many people here, man, that was coming out the woodworks I never even heard of, or they was well connected, or they was part owner of the clubs, or they had this. So I got caught up in that because when I was in high school, man, I watched the music videos and see Jay-Z and all that, the parties, the entourage and stuff. I said, I want that. You know what I mean?
And back then it was no social media, so your celebrity had some true value to it. It wasn't this like created celebrity through these pictures that we curate. No, you were actually the big dog on campus. All you guys were, from the basketball standpoint. I remember just being there, like, everyone gave deference to the basketball squad. Like, I don't care who you were, whether you was Merriman, Vernon Davis, it was like, in this area, you gave deference to Maryland basketball. So that's always kind of viewed y'all, man. I was like, man, y'all on a different status level here, man. And again, man, and I can only imagine the amount of attention. And like you said, you don't really understand it. You're 17, 18 years old. You don't understand. You're just taking it day to day, being where you're supposed to be and enjoying life. And, unless you have someone to grab you and take hold of you and be like, hey, you need to do this. But, we're still going to be young people.
Man, I lived it up to the fullest. That's one thing I can tell people. Like, on the court, I didn't dedicate myself. I didn't put as much energy as I did as going out and partying and dating all that into basketball. Oh man, it'd have been a different ball game for me and the team. But I was so much caught up in that life, and it sucked me in, man. I was trying to get out, and I couldn't get out because I'm dealing with been from DeMatha, been to McDonald's on American. I get caught up in reading those blogs and reading what people are saying. So reading the newspapers and what people expected from me and what coaches expected from me and then what I expected for myself. So I'm like, I'm really, and then I really didn't have, I had people in my corner, but some people were either, they'd tell me this and that and the third, and the next thing you know, they with me in the clubs. You know what I'm saying? They partnered with me. So it wasn't nobody that's like, yo, you know what? Nah, you're not going nowhere. You know, man, it's had people, like I said, they'd call me up and be like, look, man, if you really trying to do X, Y, and Z, you need to chill out. Or I go out and people see me out like this, man, look, you partying too much. You're doing too much of this, man. Like, right. Chill out. Like, you know,
it's but tough, man, because you're from this area and everybody knows who you are. And for me, it was when I finally kind of, you know, did my thing on the field, I was like you. I didn't really, you know, I was green, man. I was coming from Florida. I didn't really know. I was just playing football. And for me, what kind of refocused my attention was the loss of my grandparents, my freshman and sophomore year. You know, they had basically was raising myself and my other cousins, along with my mom that was in and out. But, like, that's what shook me up. And Natasha Chris, who I mentioned earlier, you know, I was ready to give it up. I was ready to go back home. I'm like, I'm done with this. Like, those two people were my, you know, my gauge of reality to tell me the truth. Amongst all the other stuff that we had to deal with being a student athlete in Maryland in this area, you know, those were the two. When I lost those two people, man, it was like, what am I really, you know, doing? And Natasha Chris was one person that she would let me give up on myself. And she used to, you know, make sure I was out of bed, call the room, show up to the dorm room, get my behind out. She saw something in me that I hadn't even seen. I didn't even know, you know, and thank goodness she did. And you talk about some of those people that were in your corner. She was in my corner and she didn't have to do it. Hell, she was employed by the university. You know, she's an academic advisor. She didn't have to do that, but she did. And I thank God for it, man, because when that happened, when I got my focus back, I could block all the other noise out. And that allowed me to kind of, you know, perfect my craft a little bit and dedicate myself a little bit and actually believe what the close people around me that I trusted their opinion about me was. So that was my saving grace. I didn't do it for myself.
Absolutely, man. No, Natasha, man, my cousin Noor knows her. I think they went to school together. Mm-hmm. But ever since I met her, connected with her, even when she was working with you guys, man, always been super cool, you know, always very cordial, giving advice, you know, how she is. Right, she'll give you her 2 cents. She's going to give it how it is, you know, and she's actually, man, trying to even help me even after I left Maryland, try to get back on campus and finish up, man. So now, Natasha, man, very good people, man, for sure. Yeah. Hey, but before we move on to talk some more Maryland football and, you know, all the accolades and things you've done, let me tell you guys a little bit about our partners over at Bet Rivers Sportsbook. If you haven't signed up with Bet Rivers yet, now's the time, because they are offering a $250 match bonus for your first deposit. But what sets them apart is that they require just one playthrough to turn your bonus into cash money. With their new Rush Pay Instant Approval, withdrawing your winnings is safer, more secure, and more reliable. With basketball season tipping off, get in on the action by going to BetRivers.com today or by downloading the Bet Rivers app. Must be 21 years or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Now, bro, I know we talked about it, and I want to get it from your perspective because obviously I play basketball, you play football. Well, we still was cool, but you know, like you said, man, you know, y'all got your game, you got ours, and everybody's moving differently a little bit.
Yeah.
What was it like? And you saying you told me what made you refocus and dedicate yourself, and it showed in the sense of the accolades. I mean, you went from all ACC second team to all ACC first team to two years in a row all American. I mean, like you said, it's that, like you said, man, is that switch and that dedication, and it's like you said, it starts showing in. I mean, you was always good, but like you said, now the accolades are showing of your dedication to the game. What was that like, and what was it like playing in the ACC, man, against the Florida States and those big teams? Cause I used to be in those games. Yo, we didn't miss a lot of football games. Well, unless it's freezing out there, but but the Florida State night games, bro. We there.
So I guess it was, you know, when I lost my grandparents, I took a huge, you know, you hit this huge momentum shift of how the public perceive student athletes now of like the mental health side of things. So I feel like during that time, like I was going through, I was spiraling out of control in terms of, I just wanted to go out. I was like, forget my responsibilities. Now with the education I have on it now, looking at that moment, it gives me chills even thinking about it. But again, I have people like Natasha Chris in my corner, just like, just she gave me something to look forward to. And once I got through that wall, it was like, let me bog things down a bit. Let me have a good time. But also, what do I want out of this? And I remember just being on the phone with my uncle. My uncle introduced me to football. He was the guy that I would constantly be in communication with. And he would, and I felt like people were looking after me, you know, and it was like, and then it developed into, I don't want to let these people down. And now, you know, obviously you have that mindset when you get to college, you have people that you don't want to let down. But now it was like, they understood, I guess, what I was going through losing my grandparents. Mm-hmm. Now these people are constantly, you know, just making sure I'm okay. And once I got to a good space, you know, football was my outlet. Right. You know, with football, I played linebacker. I could go hit, tackle, slam. I could release all that frustration. So for me, that was my outlet. And then, you know, just seeing as the games progressed and that after my, you know, first year playing a little bit, and I played behind E.J. Henderson, who was a Buckus Award winner, who had gone on to be a second rounder for the Minnesota Vikings. I remember he came back in town, Trav, and he had a Range Rover. I'd never been in a Range Rover. I didn't know what a Range Rover was. And he drove me from the facility to my dorm room. And I remember like, man, God, what is it? Where I was blown away. I've never been in anything that I never been in anything luxury ever.
Right.
It blew my mind. So that night on my laptop, I ended up downloading and putting on my screenshot. My screensaver was a picture of a Range Rover. So as small, as simple as it was, I'm like, man, if football can provide me a Range Rover, then I need to study a little bit. It was like little small nuggets, man. And
then he
kind of gave me some words of wisdom, and I kept that and applied it to, you know, the next week and the next year, and things started rolling to the point where I'm sitting in front of Friedgen and some my position coaches, and they're talking about me playing at the next level, me filing a petition to the NFL to see particularly where I would be drafted. And that was my going into my junior year. Because between you and I mean, we all have a dream to play at the next level.
For me, it
started off, I just wanted to get to college. Then once I got to college, man, I'm actually okay. I'm actually pretty good. And all these things that happen now, people are telling me I could play at the next level. And now it becomes real. So going into my junior year, I filed a petition to the NFL. They give me a... So basically what the petition of the NFL does is they give you a grade. It's grade round 1 through 7. And if you get a grade, anything less than the fourth round, there's a good chance guys typically leave. You're going to get drafted.
Right.
So I got a second round grade. So in my mind, I'm like, man, should I leave? After this? You know, so now I'm thinking I'm having that going through my head, and ended up breaking my wrist. You can't see it now, but I have these two scars on my wrist. End up breaking my wrist the summer before my junior year. And instead of me electing to get surgery, I was like, man, let's just wrap this up. Tape it up to the point where my hands would go numb just so I could finish my junior year. Because in my mind, if I had a decent year, which I did, if I still had the same grade, I was going to leave.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, after the season, I have to get surgery. I get some bad advice. You know, you got to come back because this injury could linger and it could affect your draft status. I got some really bad advice, which I don't hold any grudges, but in my mind, I was going to leave. So I had to come back and do all that. But for the most part, I know I'm going on a tantrum there, but for the most part, for me, it was once I got a taste and people, you know, when the NFL gave me that petition, that I could be drafted in the top half of the draft, for me, it was a no-brainer. I was like, I'm not missing this opportunity. I'm not letting this opportunity go. And some of the trainers, he was actually a basketball trainer, Matt Charbonneau. I don't know if you know Matt at all, but he was a guy that I was so nervous about getting injured. Like I was on the nut. Like I would freak out if anything, if I got a bruise or whatever. I was in a crazy space, man, because I wanted to do everything I possibly could to get to that next level. And it was nerve wracking, man. It was not easy. The easy part was showing up on Saturdays and going to play and tackle people and lining people up and doing everything outside of that.
Yeah.
It was difficult, man, because mentally I was afraid that I was going to miss out on this opportunity.
Hey, bro, I tell people all the time, I don't think this had nothing to do with being on the field, but I tell people all the time, thank God we didn't have social media back then, bro.
Man. That's saying,
I think, you know what's so funny? I think one time Facebook just came out and you had to use your EDU or EU, that EDU as email address. I had an email address. I didn't know how to access my email address, bro. So I was like, man, I can't log in. I can't even log on to this thing. I don't even know what this is. So that was the only thing that they had back then. That's what Facebook first came out. You had to have an EDU number and an EDU email address. And I was like, forget it, man, whatever.
Life was simple, bro. We didn't have all these different social media. I don't know what we did to fill in the time. Now that I think about it,
I'm
like, what the hell did I do?
Bro, we had the video phones. We had the, but it was terrible. It was terrible, man.
It wasn't like it is now. Now you can
find
anything on the internet.
Google. Thank God, bro.
I would have got expelled just from running around after y'all beat Duke. Standing around a burnt mattress. You know what I'm saying? Like, if somebody would have caught me on social media, you're done. You're out of here, buddy.
I tell kids that all the time, man. I say, man, I got to be extra careful because everybody's paparazzi. Everybody can take a picture. You can not be knowing. It can be a fight going on, but you're there. They video recording. Like, and the first person they see is you because of who you are. So I said, man, y'all got so much harder. I feel bad for y'all.
so much more advanced than us, man. You look at some of these guys. I remember the quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars played at Clemson. Number one overall pick. I remember looking at his Instagram before he was Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor.
He had over a million followers in college, bro. In college. Jeez. I don't want that type of prep. Back in when we were in school,
hey, bro, I would have learned that. I would have learned real fast how what kind of status I had if we had social media. Yeah. I would have learned real fast because of how people tag you and your video come up picture like, oh man, you was, and the way I was going when I was on campus, bro, like I was cool when like I wasn't out of control, but I was everywhere and I was getting
We saw a lot of parties. Listen, we saw a lot of parties. Like, I was right there with you.
So it was right there with you. Like I said, and some people still got pictures of me being at these certain events or whatever. But I'm like, man, just imagine if everybody had to, because you know, you walk in the building, you walk in this party, what people do. People taking out their phones. We chugging beer, people taking out their phones. And,
so and I think would have had a better bead on us too. You know,
you got to be strategic
about what you told them. You're a young person and you got to teach them early. You can't ignore it. You know, you got to teach them. I have a goddaughter staying with us. It's her last day of high school. And like, she is so mature for her age. And, you know, we don't follow her. I mean, we follow her, but we're not in a business. We trust her. But, you know, you got to be strategic nowadays, man. You got to make sure because everyone's watching. You know, I can go see who you are. What's your social media? It's like your email. It's your personal contact, you know?
Exactly. And that's what I do, man. Like, you know, I tell kids, I say, look here, you guys, you know, you want to be this, then the third. And sometimes I go to kids, like I talk to, and I go to their Instagram or their Facebook account. I see them, you know, they got pictures with their middle fingers up or some of that and all that different stuff. I said, man, look, you got to understand that these college coaches, sometimes they don't, the way they recruit you now, they go to your social media account. Just go to see who you I know a lot of kids, college coaches was looking at them, ready to offer them a scholarship, took it back because of who they was around or the stuff that they posted. Because they're like, look at this kid, then you posting online. So I try to educate them on be careful, first of all, your surroundings, and then be careful about what you post, because because we were young, we don't know that. Imagine if we had this type of access to social media back when we were in college, we don't really understand unless people come to us, tell us, and like, right. Man, be careful about what social media does. And it's so, like you said, man, it's just so much harder now for these kids, because it's so much, everything is social media and internet driven, you know what I mean?
And some kids get a false sense of reality. You know, facts. Like, you know, you see yourself all the time and your small crew of people, you know, your reach may extend a little bit, and now you get a false sense of reality. Now you don't want to, you think you've made it, and now you don't want to work as hard. So that's
right.
It's a gift and a curse. So it all boils down to, like, honestly, the mental maturity of the individual. You know, are you going to, you know, make, obviously, if you gave us social media, we would repeat the same mistakes some of these young
people. Of course.
Unless we have people like you to kind of, that been there, who understands, like, this is what's happening. This is the landscape of this environment you're navigating in. And college coaches are watching. Everyone's watching this.
Absolutely. So for you, like, even back then, like in college, you're big name. You talking about me, big man. You big man on campus. You all American, you know. So how did you, I mean, you told me how you dealt with that in regards to how you settled down and how you went into, what was that experience like? Like you say, that you the big man on campus, and what was some of your most memorable moments in a game or situation? What was, like, man, I tell people this all the time.
Yeah, so Florida State, my sophomore year, it was the first, so my freshman year, we had, we won 10 games. We didn't beat Florida State, and we were blowing people out so much that me and my boy, Will Kershaw, we backed up Leon Joe and E.J. Henderson. So we played a lot, just like garbage time. And so sophomore year comes around, E.J. gets drafted. Leon Joe is going to his senior year. Now I get promoted to start. So it was the second game of the season. And I forget who we had played the first game. See, it was a home game, but the second game was in Florida State. And I told you earlier, when I graduated high school, you either went to UF or you went to Florida State.
Right.
I was a diehard. So a lot of my high school buddies were at the game. A lot of my family and friends. Tallahassee is only maybe 5 or 6 hours from where I grew up. Everyone's at the game. So for me, it was like playing that was my national championship. I couldn't sleep the night before. I remember the coin. I have a picture somewhere around here of a coin toss. Like, all Maryland got, the whole team walked out to the 50-yard line, and Florida State met us. And you see me, I don't know why I was jumping, but it's a picture of me. I'm like 6 feet off the ground, bro. Like,
dang, that's dope, man.
So the second play of the game, you know, I'm now, you know, butterflies are going, I'm nervous, it's a packed house. I got all my family and friends there and watching in the stadium. And the second play of the game, I forget the call, but I didn't even think where to line up. And I remember Leon Joe, like, trying to tell me something, but it was so loud, I just blocked it out. I was in my own little world. He was trying to tell me I was lined up wrong. I didn't really, it didn't register. And I see the tight end run a 10-yard out.
Right.
And I jumped it, picked it from Chris Ricks, returned it 58 yards. And the crowd, I mean, just, it was the highlight of my career. That, when you talk about a moment, I realized that I could play at the next level. That was my moment. I made a play against Chris Ricks, who I had watched in high school be Captain America of football. You know, I intercept him, I run over him and Lorenzo Booker, and I returned for 58 yards, and I went on to finish that game with like 12 tackles. I blocked the kick. At that moment, I knew, I was like, that's when things changed for me. It was like, okay, the conversation, how coaches approach me, what they would talk about, they coached me like I was going to the league, like I was the lead on the team. And it was literally one play. It happened overnight. I was lined up wrong. Thank goodness I was lined up wrong, because it changed the trajectory of my career. And that was, to me, that was probably one of the, that was the signature moment. I've had some other plays on like fourth down and interceptions and all this, but that to me, because of what Florida State had meant to me growing up, I had watched Warren Gunn, Deion Sanders, Derrick Brooks, all these guys play at Florida State. And here I was making a play against them because I felt like that I was overlooked. Like all the linebackers they had chosen, you know, now you know who I am. You know, and I remember I have I actually have the newspaper clipping in one of the closets here of a reporter asking the late, great Bobby Bowden about me and how I slipped between the cracks because I grew up in Florida. He was and he had nothing but good things to say. So for me, that moment was probably the highlight of my career in college for sure.
Man, of course, especially against Florida State, man. Florida State was huge back then, bro. Like,
yeah, game winner against Duke, man. Freshman, sophomore year. I was like, your confidence is through the roof.
Of course. Absolutely, man. That's what's up, man. So now, like I said, all ACC, all American. Now it's time to get ready for the draft. Mm-hmm. What was that process like? Because I know obviously it's two different processes in regards to the NBA draft, the NFL draft. What was that process like for you? And then what did it feel like for you during that moment when you heard your name called?
Man, that moment was like I was in overdrive. Like I elected. So for me, I had finals coming up, and I elected to not do finals. I withdrew so I can gain an extra month training for the combine.
Gotcha.
And so nobody was on board with it. Only person that was on board was me and my team, my agent. And, you know, I get why, you know, people in University of Maryland didn't want me to do it. Hey, you come this far, finish, take your exams, pass them, graduate. But in my mind, I knew I would always come back and finish it. So for me, that was a little bit of a situation. Because, I'm a people pleaser. I was you know, I didn't want to disappoint anyone, but I knew I had to do what's best for me. So I go through the draft, and I trained every day. I was so self-conscious of whatever I did, whatever I put into my body was either going to help me make more money or hurt me not to make money, you know, in the draft. For me, I embraced that, just that mantra. And it was, so we get to the combine, you know, you have to go through, I probably met with 15 teams. And so what they do is you get in and, you know, you have to get weighed, you have to go through the bench press, you have to run your 40, do all these things. But I didn't know, well, I did know, when you get there, you have to meet with teams. It's like training camp. Everything is on schedule. You're meeting with teams and then you're back in your room, have lunch, then you back meeting with teams, then the next day you have to run a 40. And then you're done with the 40, then the next day you have to do this. Then you have to do, it's so exhausting. Like you barely eat, you barely know what day it is. You just in the mode of this is a job interview and you gotta put your best foot forward. Like all the preparation leading up to that point, you gotta pour it out. You gotta make it happen. And it's stressful as hell. Oh my goodness, it's stressful. But for me, it ended up working out. I mean, I ran the time that I knew I would run. I wasn't a really fast guy. And so when we had the pro day at Maryland, I didn't run the 40. I just did drills. And I remember right after the combine, I told my agent, I'm going to bust my tail from January 1 to middle of April. And when I'm done with the combine, me and my girl at the time, we're taking a trip. So I took a small little trip, came back, trained for another 2.5 weeks, and did the pro day at Maryland. And all I did was drills. I didn't do any of the bench press. I left it all at the combine. So for me, I had a plan. It worked out. And then draft day comes around. And, you know, typically you'll see every year guys will have all their family, you know, at some place. So it's just all about you. Well, me, I wasn't that dude, man. I was like, I felt so much pressure. So what I did the night before the draft at my uncle's house, we did a block party. So everybody in the neighborhood who wanted to congratulate me, you can congratulate me now because tomorrow for draft day, I'm only going to have my close net friends and family. So I don't feel pressure. I got to, you know, you don't feel that pressure. Right. So that's just what I did. The next day, I got two hotel rooms near the beach where I grew up, and it was just family and friends. And I remember during the combine, so my agent, we had realized, he had told me I would be drafted anywhere from late first to early second round.
Gotcha.
And I met with some teams that basically I thought I was going to, Dallas at 18. And I never forget, Bobby Carpenter from Ohio State was drafted there. And, you know, it's 32 picks in the first round. So now I'm like, okay, they didn't take me. So who else did I talk to? So I'm thinking like Tennessee or Jacksonville.
Right.
And during that draft, they didn't pick me. So now we're itching closer to the last pick of the first round. No one picked me. And so now I'm like, I go to the bathroom, Trav. Like, I walk outside and I'm like, boohoo crying, bro. Like, I'm like, it's too much. I remember my uncle following. He's like, man, you okay? I was like, I don't know, man. I don't want to disappoint anybody. Da, 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 da. I'm talking crazy. And he talks some sense into me. Like, boy, you made it this far. Like, you going to get drafted. Like, relax. To me, I want to, you know, I'm competing against myself.
Right.
So we finished that conversation. I go to the bathroom. And at this time, I have two phones. I have my regular phone that you and I would share the phone.
Yeah.
And I have another phone where I've only given it out to NFL personnel.
Right.
So when they draft me, there's going to be no interference. So I'm getting ready to use the bathroom. And that phone that I have for NFL personnel starts to ring.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I started to fumble. I almost dropped it in the toilet. The phone is ringing. I'm finally, like, pants half off my ass. Like, I finally picked it up. Hello? And it's Phil Savage, the GM for the Cleveland Browns. He's like, DeQuell, is this you? I'm Phil Savage. I want you to talk to Romeo. Would you like to be a Cleveland Brown? Da-da-da. We're sending it in now. And, like, just tears just start just dripping down. So I finish. So we get off the phone call. I fix myself and I walk outside. Just, you could tell I've been crying. My uncle thought I was just crying for whatever from the conversation we had just had, but I didn't tell anybody. So we had this big screen playing, and on the 34th pick, you see my name, and everybody just started looking at me, and then the room just erupted, man.
It was
a moment, man. I got a picture of me and my uncle just hugging it out. And we just like locked in our hugs for like a minute or two. It was surreal, man. It was really surreal. And then literally the next day, the next morning, 6 a.m. or 7 a.m., that same night? No, the next morning they flew me out to Cleveland, had to do the press conference, put us in a nice suite. And 2 weeks later, rookie minicamp is around. But I remember that moment, like that was a special moment, man, because I didn't just do it for myself. My grandparents, I knew, was looking down on me, smiling.
Yeah.
I put in a lot of work, and I made a lot of people feel good about just them investing their time and energy towards me. So that it was a surreal moment.
Man, absolutely, man. I can only imagine, man, like you said, putting all that work in, man, going through a lot of ups and downs, and then finally basically reaping what you sowed, you know, those sacrifices, that hard work, that dedication, man. Paying off for something that, as little kids growing up, or you know, I mean, going through that process, we're like, man, we want this, and then now it's finally there, man. Then you said, the next morning, you on that plate.
Yeah, it's no better feeling, man. Like you try to duplicate it. Like I've had some moments like that throughout my career,
right?
And it's just so satisfying. And you think, you know, you just go back, your mind just automatically goes back to like the process of it all, the journey of it all. Like all the, because it's not all highs. You won't have a ton of lows during that process. But if you stick to it and you stay committed to it, and no matter what people are doing around you, you have a vision, you have a goal, you have a mindset. Like that's how it felt, man. It's like, man, I did it.
Right.
I did it for me. You know, it was a surreal moment. But yeah, they fly you out right away. Like, no, you got to get in. And now you see the business side of things. Like, no, this train moves.
Right.
And, I remember that year. That was a crazy year. You talk about being like a culture shock. You go from Maryland thinking you have things kind of figured out. I know how to watch football and study.
Yeah.
And I thought my training camp in Maryland was tough. The training camp in Cleveland, it wasn't as physical. Yeah, it was the most energy I'd ever exerted from a mental and physical standpoint. The game was so much faster. Just the amount of, you know, I have notebooks for days in this closet that you can't see right now. And right. Literally from front to back, they're full of just information. And if you were to read it, Trav, it's English, but you wouldn't be able to understand, like, what the hell kind of, what is this?
right.
What is Phil Stack 3 Leo? What does that even mean? So it's, you realize, like, oh, school, like the habits that you created in college, studying.
Right. Yeah.
Either you had them or you didn't, or when you get to the NFL, you were going to figure it out because there's no way you could process all this information and not write anything down and go home and study. So a lot of people don't know that. Listen, they see Sundays is great, but Monday through Sunday is you probably do more work in the classroom than on the field for sure. Mm-hmm. And you have walkthroughs, and and I was a signal caller, so I had to know everyone's adjustment. I had to know as much as the coaches had to know. And I had to start doing that at a very young age. And I'm like, damn, I'm just trying to figure out which meeting room to go to.
Right.
It was a lot going on, but they hit you with so much stuff right away. You figure out how to balance it all. And you realize quickly, if you're going to hang out, you only have one day a week. Monday was Tuesday was official day off. So Monday in the league, guys would go out or do whatever. But other than that, there was no time.
right. And that's I'm glad you said that, man, because you know, people that didn't play professional sports or don't know, you know, I mean, they from the outside looking in, so they don't understand that life or what comes with it. All they see is, especially when they talk to kids, like, oh man, you know, like for me, for example, basketball, they're like, oh man, look at Katie, oh look at LeBron with these houses and these cars and all that. I said, man, look, man, look. Oh, y'all see the finished, y'all see the finished product.
Right.
Y'all don't see behind the scenes where, you know, I'm going to the gym and I'm seeing Katie work out, or I'm seeing these guys work out and all the work they put in. Right. Like, you don't see that. You don't see the weightlifting or the drills or everything they got to go. Like you said, you have to do, you have to make sure you're training, but at the same time, you got to handle the business too, because you got endorsements, you got media, you got the interviews, you got to do the business side of things. So you're doing both at the same time, and that's double taxing. They don't see that. So all they see is the commercials, the money, the bling, the cars, the houses. They don't see all the other stuff that come with it.
Man, I remember, and it's not as simple as it is. If you stay, like I grew up with a lot of guys who were 10 times better than I was, Trav, on the football field. But the difference between them and me was, you know, obviously not everyone has everything that's expected to happen to you happens. You know, you go through the ebbs and flows of it. And for me, I stayed at it. I stayed committed to it. That's the only difference. I stayed committed to it. When it got tough, now I wanted to quit at times. Right. But for whatever reason, through help, not just for myself, but I had a lot of good people around me to keep me motivated, to keep pushing through it. And it helped me in life, and it helped me in my career. Because once I got to the league and I figured out, okay, how this thing works, and now I want to get better. Now you're a starter. How can I be a Pro Bowl player? And so I remember being in the buildings, and this is a professional athlete. I would be working out extra, watching film extra, and guys would say, man, why are you doing that? You know, these are professional athletes. So there's cancers everywhere at every step.
Of course.
You know, some guys are just physically gifted, and they don't have to do as much, play the game above the shoulders. But I knew I was like right in the middle. I wasn't the fastest. I wasn't the strongest. I wasn't the tallest. So my game had to, you know, the game I played above the shoulders had to be better than anyone, because I knew physically, you know, I was half the athlete, half the guys I was playing next to, playing against. So once I figured that out, that's when my career, I really started excelling, because I realized the more film I watched of myself and of opponents, I was already pretty good. I had pretty good instincts on the field. What separated me from the guys next to me and a lot of guys in the league was there was no way any guy had watched more film than me other than coaches. And towards the end of my career, I was watching more film than coaches. You know, so they gave me that level of respect throughout my career. It's like, oh, no, you can't BS him because he's – no. He's going to professionally challenge you. It's like, no, that's not – I saw something different, blah, 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 blah. So I realized, like, you know, I just became obsessed with my craft, man. Once I made the Pro Bowl, once I signed my next deal, it was like, okay, how can I continue to – now, how can I have a career at this? Like, how can I, you know, have a career and save and take care of my family when I'm done? So it wasn't easy by any stretch. It was not easy.
So you gave me a moment in college when you knew, like, yeah, I can do it on this. I can get to the next level. Yeah. What was that play or situation in the league when you was like, yeah, I'm here?
I think it was my 2011 season. It was, in 2009 and 2010, I had tore my pec. I tore my left pec, my right pec, back-to-back years. So I was drafted. I started my rookie year. Things were going well. And then I get injured 1 year.
Right.
Season-ending injury. And then I have a season-ending injury 2010 where I don't even touch the field. So now the NFL is going to a lockout year. So I had missed pretty much almost 2 years of football. Mm. And in the football world is out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
What have you done for me lately? So a new coach comes in, and during that time, I was spending my time between Cleveland and here. And I finally got with a trainer out here named Myron Flowers, 360 Fit. Shout out to them. And, you know, they had trained Vernon Davis ever since they were, you know, he was a young team, his brother, Vontae Davis, and many other athletes. So I got with him, and it changed my life completely. Like, we worked out hard, Travis. So that 2011 season comes around, you know, I was on a tear. Like, you couldn't – my wife, now, you would ask, like, when I would work out, I watched what I ate. I was in my hyperbaric chamber. I was getting massages, like, in the off season. So when that 2011 season came around, when I balled that year. Oh, my goodness. I ended up making the so the NFL does a top 100 players in the league. I just made the cut. I was 96 top-rated player, top 100 player in the league. So that year, as the games progressed, I realized I was making noise when other coaches from the opposing team would come up to me and say, hey, man, if the Browns don't sign you back, we'll come after you. You know, like every team, you get love from players that you grew up watching, Big Ben and, you know, Frank Gore and all these people that I'm finally getting love that I never have really received prior to that. You know, they just saw, like, I just flashed on film. And I remember every game, I think I ended up, me and London Fletcher was back and forth. I think I was either, like, second behind him in total tackles that year. And I thought I was an alternate to the Pro Bowl. But like Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, that we would face twice a year, all these guys would come up to me after the game. He's like, hey, youngster, you balling. Keep it up. You know what I mean? So that's when I knew it was like a fraternity. Like, you respected. Right. You knew, like, the guys who watch film.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. He's a player. And so it was almost a way of, like, how you push it forward. So when I saw young guys that didn't sign that big deal who was putting in work, I would tell them. And it meant, you know, and looking back, like, it meant something. Just like it meant something for opposing coaches and opposing players to tell me. So that whole year, I balled, bro. Like, I was on a tear. And for me, that was a turning point where I was like, okay. When Ray Lewis signed off on it and Ed Reed signed off on it and, you know, Hines Ward and the guys that would just beat up on the Cleveland Browns twice a year.
Right.
They were
giving
me my respect, and I looked up to them as they were what I was trying to strive to be. That's when I realized I hit a stride. And again, that year I was made an alternate of the Pro Bowl behind Ray. And so the alternate Pro Bowler means that if the guy in front of you goes to the Super Bowl, or if he elects not to play, then the next guy in line would go. So the way it was the way the Pro Bowl teams were kind of assembled was AFC, NFC. And for years, I was behind Ray. Probably 3 or 4 years, I was behind Ray, first alternate. I'm like, God, dog, man. If they go to the Super Bowl, then I would be able to go. I'm like, God, dog. So I found myself rooting for the Ravens in the playoffs a lot, just so I could get to the Pro Bowl. And I remember reaching out to him 1 year, but I was like, hey, Ray, man, whatever it is you want, I got it. But I'm trying to get to the Pro Bowl, bro. Right. And his response was legendary. He was like, keep working hard, youngster. I'm like, damn. I guess that means no.
And now that's what's up, man. Like you said, like, man, you're talking about legends, guys. I remember Ray used to come to the campus, you know what I mean? Yeah. His brother went there. Then also, and then he also used to come to the – he came to the game one time, bro. Mm-hmm. And we were playing – Virginia. I think we were about to play Virginia. And he's not that tall. He ain't that tall of a dude. So, you know, the TV makes him look – it makes him look bigger and taller than he is. But listen up. So he walks in the locker room. I'm like – my mom, I'm like, man, I could take Ray. I said, I could take Ray. But then he opened his mouth and he started speaking. And he gave one of his speeches, bro. Hey. I'm not going to lie to you, bro. Hey, you would have thought you could have run through the walls, man. It wasn't nothing too long of a speech. Mm-mm. Something like if you take this hand and you ball it to, you take these five fingers and you ball it to the fist. I was like, it's over, bro. After he finished talking, dog, we was so hyped, but we was like, yo, if that's just like a sample of what he does when he's in the locker room with his team, I can only imagine, bro.
He's like that all the time. Just just energy. I don't know how he finds the energy. And just, he's got like a preacher voice. And it's just his tone. It just, he always has something good to say, man. And you could tell it's coming from the heart. And he's speaking from the heart. But yeah, man. No, he spoke to our team 2014. I was with the Colts. And we were getting ready to play Tom Brady, the AFC Championship game. And because of his relationship with Chuck Pagano, our head coach at the time, who was his defensive coordinator in Baltimore, he came and spoke. And it wasn't short. And when I tell you, I mean, it was like a Saturday. I was ready to go suit up, bro. He just has that type of effect.
Of course.
Knows how to motivate, man. I understand why Baltimore kept him around as long as they did, because one conversation with this dude and you're ready to – you're inspired.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely, man. So you mentioned 2014. That was the year you made a Pro Bowl, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, made the Pro Bowl that year, finally. And I guess I was the alternate that year as well. I wasn't voted in. So the only reason I was able to go because Bobby Wagner, I think Seattle had gone to the Super Bowl that year. Mm-hmm. And we had lost. So, and I remember being on the plane after we had lost to the Patriots. The equipment guys was like, we got to do some. I mean, in my mind, I'm like, all right, I'm going back to D.C. Right. I wasn't even thinking about Pro Bowl. He's like, you got to do this, that, and the third. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. They had to call me the next morning because I had left. I was like, hey. Yeah. I was like, hey, idiot, you know you're going to the Pro Bowl. Like, you got to do some fitting. You got to do some other things.
Yeah. Like,
wait, what? And then it was like my mindset was someplace else, man.
Right.
But that was a great year, man. I Pro Bowl is tricky. Pro Bowl is tricky. It's like a popularity test, and once you make it once or twice, it's almost like a heavyweight boxer. You have to knock him out to get the belt. You know, it's like if you don't, even though he may seem like he got beat, that the other guy should have won. If you don't knock him out, you don't get the belt. That's how it was in the Pro Bowl year.
Jeez, man. Yeah, but then now that you're retired and you just recently got the Hall of Fame with the Cleveland Browns.
Appreciate that.
What was that like, man? When you got that call, it's like, man, we're inducting you to the Cleveland Browns Hall of Fame. What was that like, man?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was cool because the person who called me, she still works for the Browns. She's in the marketing, and she's been there ever since I was drafted there in 2006. So it was cool, you know, to hear from her. And for me, it was even sweeter because my son never seen me play, you know, and it was the first time he was old enough to understand, like, oh, this is for daddy. This is
right.
Daddy. That. So for me, it was cool to have him around, and me and Josh Cribbs ended up going into, we're Browns legends now, you know, yeah. Which they got a banquet, and they gave us sport coats with the Browns emblem on it. And we got a Rolex, which we haven't received yet, but they have one coming. yeah, we'll see. We'll see. but it was good to reconnect with, you know, Jim Brown was there, one of my favorite people in the world. Good to connect with some, you know, older generation of the Browns community. And during the game, I mean, it was cool, man. It was hard to put into words at that time because, you know, as you mentioned, you're in the moment.
Right.
We had a chance to go to practice, you know, talk to Baker and all these other guys. And it was cool. It was really cool. It was a cool moment to for organization to recognize all of us, recognize the guys who were getting inducted, because we didn't win a Super Bowl. We didn't go to the playoffs during my time there. In my 8 years there, we didn't go to the playoffs. And it was cool that they recognized everything that I'd given that franchise. And to have my son be a part of it, that was the icing on the cake.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely, man. So now, retired, what is, I know you got a podcast, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Athletes Unplugged, I actually started it last July or August or so. It was, you know, you listen to all these podcasts and you sit around and you see all these different voices and people. This is a space now where it's our moment, you know, former athletes to tell their own personal story. So I wanted to tell my story and other guys that I met throughout my tenure in the National Football League tell their stories that they won't tell themselves. You know, for instance, my buddy Tamba Lee, he was from Liberia. He's from Liberia, and he grew up in a Civil War torn country where, you know, if he heard airplanes, that meant danger. You know, so, you know, to hear him talk about just his, you know, life in Liberia to life, you know, in college, going to Penn State and being a first rounder and making a career out of it, he's defeated all odds. So Athletes Unplugged is the name of the podcast. And basically I'm having conversations like you and I, and I'm dedicated to telling those, you know, my friends or my new friends' story. And I don't know if you can tell, but while I'm recording, I'm a big cigar guy. So I'm either smoking a cigar or sipping on some whiskey or drinking some wine, but it's fun. You know, it's the way that I realize I enjoy telling other people's stories, and it's a way to connect and stay connected with folks. And I enjoy it. I really do.
Hey man, D, I ain't gonna hold you too much longer, man. I definitely appreciate you, bro, for joining the Go Terps with Travis Garrison on the Twitter 68 Networks, man. Really, man, you my first football athlete that came on the show, so I just wanted to know that, bro.
Okay, I'm gonna have to have you on Athletes Unplugged, bro. So
man, absolutely, bro. Say less, man. But really, man, I definitely appreciate you taking time out today, man. Definitely enjoyed hearing your story. I'm pretty sure a lot of other fans and those listeners, man, gonna be intrigued and excited to hear from you as well, man. So, like I said, D, man, I definitely appreciate your time, bro.
No, I appreciate you giving me this platform, man. And for anyone who wants to check out the podcast, you can catch it on wherever you consume your podcast. It's at Athletes Unplugged, man. And I appreciate the opportunity. Great talking to you. And hopefully we'll get this thing rolling here pretty soon with this community service and off the field venture that you're heavily invested in. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. I'm definitely gonna hit you up about it, bro, for sure, man. All right, bro. Appreciate you.